Good afternoon. That was a delicious and nourishing meal. It was for all of you, those of you that were working on the lunch. Thank you very much. It was very good. I want to talk a little bit about schedule, routine, and self-discipline. Homeschooling is a very busy, busy work. And any family that has been homeschooling for a while knows that one of the things that becomes a premium is time. And whenever we're doing anything where there is a premium of time, we find out that one of the things we have to do is we have to start cutting. And so today we want to talk a little bit about some of the things that homeschoolers cut that actually hurts them in the long run and makes things more difficult as the days go by. We have a market garden at home. In the summertime, we're busy, and in Manitoba, where we live, our spring is so very busy because the ground is frozen 4 to 5 months out of the year. And when it thaws in the spring, from the time it thaws until we put our corn seed in the ground, sometimes only three weeks. And in that time, the grass starts growing. We have to start mowing. There's so many things that we have to do. And so this year in the springtime, I had all my fertilizer and my trace minerals together that I was going to put down on the cornfields. And I started putting them down one day when it was nice and quiet and the day was getting towards the end. The sun was going down. I started pushing it, but the sun was down. It was going dark, and I'd only finished about two-thirds of the fields. And I said, well, I'll have to do this some other day. And I went and got me a red flag, and I put it down on the ground to show me where I'd stopped. Next day, it was windy. I couldn't spread it. The day after that was windy. I couldn't spread it. And then we started planting things, and it just got busy. And by the time I put everything down, the fertilizer and the trace minerals, it was on the rest of the field. It was maybe a month, 6 weeks later, the corn was already up. And I thought, I put it down. And my consultant had said, you know, get it down early. But I thought, well, it'll be fine. I still got it down. Fast forward a few months later, and I'm harvesting corn, and you know what it's like whenever the rows are good and the picking is good, and you're just going along, and yeah, one ear here, next one here, ear, another ear. Oh, we skip one plant, but that's fine. You go on. And all of a sudden, you get to a plant, and there's no ear. And the next plant, there's no ear. I mean, there's an ear, but it's not ready. The next plant, it's not ready. And I look to my left, and I'm looking, and all the rest of the ears in this row are green, they're small, they're not ready. And I look down, and there's that red flag. And I knew right then that I had cut, but I had cut in the wrong place. It hurt. So this fall, I made sure that I got all my fertilizer together, and I spread it, and it's already on the field, and the ground is ready for the frost. And I'm hoping that next year I won't have the same problem that I did this year. In that last third, I lost about 30% of the crop, so that hurt. Every year, Mary and I, we talk to homeschoolers that are bogged down. Children are failing tests. Sometimes they're behind one or two grades, sometimes three grades. Mom is discouraged, and Dad doesn't know what to do. And then when we try to help them, we start off with the obvious things. Do the children have problems with eyesight? Is there something physical like hearing problems? Is it spiritual? Sometimes there's a spiritual issue. Maybe mom is depressed. Is it a marriage issue? Sometimes mom and dad are not getting along and they're not working as a team. But sometimes we find families where mom and dad, they get along just fine. And they're doing well spiritually. And there's nothing wrong physically with the children. They're intelligent. And they're still floundering. They're bogged down. Does anyone have an idea what that problem might be? The problem we find is over and over is that it's homeschool management. You know, how many people ate here today? 500? Over 500 people? Did you notice how smoothly everything went? No one was yelling. Everyone ate. The food was delicious. Management. Management. We can have the best curriculum, We can have a great marriage. We can have intelligent children. But if we don't manage the curriculum and the time and the learning environment properly, we can still fail. When I was a school teacher years ago, I was principal of a school, and there were some teachers that would come in and, you know, it took a little while to learn how to do it, but after a while, you could just walk in their classroom. There was order. Things were humming along. Efficient teachers, and you go to the next classroom, and I'm thinking of one in particular right now. You go into her classroom, and she treated her children more like she was a babysitter instead of a teacher. And we tried to help her, but it just didn't work. Was the second teacher less intelligent than the first teacher? No. It was just a matter of management. She did not get to the point where she knew how to manage the classroom. And she was not a successful teacher. She went to another school later on, tried her hand there, and I talked then to the school board member in that school, and I said, how's it going here? And he's like, we're not going to ask her to come back. Now, you know how desperate schools are for having teachers. If they're not going to ask a teacher to come back, you know it's serious. And you know what? She had a good demeanor. She loved the children, but she just could not manage the curriculum and manage the students. Classroom management is extremely important. And so I want to talk today about two particular areas where homeschoolers cut. And the first one is with drills. I first became aware of this years ago when working at Christian Light. Before we put out a course, we normally do field tests. And we send the course out to schools and homeschoolers, and we ask them to use this course, and you can use the material for free, and in return for that, we would like your responses. Tell us what's good and what's not so good and how we can make it better. And we found out that when we were field testing math, it was very hard for us to really get a good gauge of whether or not our curriculum was on target when we sent it to homeschoolers. And that's because we would send the course with all these drills, the math drills, the flashcards, and the homeschoolers wouldn't use them. You know, they would say, you know, the children are really struggling with learning facts. And then we say, oh, really? Well, did you do the drills? No. Okay, well, that's part of the program. And ever since then, Mary and I will go into a home and we'll find out that the flashcards are gathering dust and the drills are in the back of the book and are not being utilized. They'll do everything else, but they don't do the drills. And I want to say that it's a missing ingredient and it's an important ingredient. And if you're not doing them, you're really hurting your children. I want to talk a little bit about the brain and how it works. All of you, if you have a pen or pencil, get that out and a piece of paper. We're going to do a few exercises here. You don't need a whole lot of room. Maybe something like 3 inches wide and 6 inches deep or 4 inches wide. So our brains have been designed by God to be efficient. And there are many different ways that the brain does this. Now, at the top left of the page, I'd like you to write this number down. Okay? 5202. 5202. All right. Now I want you to memorize it. Okay, got it memorized? All right, now, I'm going to go out like that with my hand, and at that time, I want all of you to give me the number, say it out loud at the same time. Okay, now write down this number, 2025. Now say it again. How many of you wanted to say 2025? Okay, compare those two numbers. What's the difference? What's the correlation between those two numbers? They're reversed. Same numbers, just reversed. Did your mind process the second number differently than the first number? Yes. This is a function that our brain uses called clustering. So it recognizes this information, puts it in a cluster, and it recognizes it as one unit. It helps, doesn't it? It's a lot easier to remember 2025 than 5202. Another way that the brain will save time and become more efficient is by using muscle memory. And let's try something here. Do I have my phone? Yes, I do. Okay, get ready. I'm going to have you write the number 2025 as often as you can within 10 seconds, okay? So I'm going to say start, and then you just write 2025, 2025, 20, as many times as you can there on the paper, all right? Ready? Go. Stop. All right, raise your hand if you wrote it 5 times. 6 times. 7 times. 8 times. 9 times. Ooh, fast writer back there. 10 times. All right. You know what's coming next? Switch hands. That's right. Ready? Go. It has to be legible. If not, it doesn't count. Stop. Stop. Raise your hand if you wrote it. Ooh, let's start at the top this time. We got to see. All right. 7 times. 8 times. 6. Good. Are you ambidextrous? No. 5. I should ask your wife whether or not it's legible. 4. 3. 2. I'm not going to ask one. All right. So we call that muscle memory. And it's really not muscle memory. Like, in other words, the memorization is not here in the arm. It's all in the brain. So that's another way that our brain becomes efficient or works in an efficient way. And these are things that you've learned years ago, and it just is stuck in there. And the way it works is that the brain creates these pathways between neurons so that when you start a function, then it just recognizes it. Oh, the person wants to do this. And it's like a pathway, and the electrons zoop, go back and forth quickly. You can kind of picture it like, imagine the brain is like a forest. And so if you want to go into the forest and get something, if you go through the forest one time, you turn around and look, you haven't really created a trail. You can see where you went, but there's no trail. You go there once a day for a month, and you see the start of a trail. You go there 3 times a day for a year, and at the end of the year, you have a trail. That's what our brain does. When it senses these repeated motions, then it says, okay, let's create a trail so that in the future, whenever he or she wants to do this, here's the trail. Here's how you do it. And the brain just was able to do it much more efficiently. And what's wonderful is that the brain can create paths that are so permanent, they're like asphalt. Like when I was a teenager, I learned how to juggle. I can still juggle to this day. It's amazing. I can pick up balls and I can juggle. And those of you that learned how to play or throw a baseball or a football or you know, skate, you can still hopefully do that today. Now, another thing that the brain is good at in creating efficiency is with long-term memory. I'm going to ask you a fact, and once again, I'd like you all to answer at the same time. Ready? What is 12 times 12? Very good. One more time. What is 12 times 13? 156. Very good. What's the difference? One is only 12 more than the other. So when I asked 12 times 12, you were using long-term memory. This is information. There's a pathway, just 12 times 12, boop, and your little neurons connected and lit up and whatever, and boom, here's the answer. When I asked what is 12 times 13, did you use long-term memory, or do you have it memorized, or did you work it? What'd you say? Okay, so that's working memory. So that's working, okay? You can do it. If I asked you, you know, okay, 144 plus 12, there you go. So that's working memory, working memory, or both. Let's say a story problem. Ideally, both. So if they have a story problem, and the question is like, if there's 60 apples in a bin and there are three bins, how many apples are there all together? Three bins, how many apples are there all together? Okay, very good. Now, how many of you have memorized what 60 times 3 is? See, so what you did there is a combination. You did 3 times 6. That's long-term memory. And then working memory is there's a 0 in there and you added the 0. You see, because if I asked you to count by 60s, you probably, it'd be kind of hard. We could do 61, maybe you could do it, but past 5 might be a little bit difficult. But it was a combination of both. Now, the problem is that if children don't learn their math facts properly, that entire problem is working memory. You see what I'm saying? And you just saw how much easier it was to do recall with long-term memory versus working memory. And see, for all of us, is limited. We normally can only do one thing. You know what it's like driving into the city, a big city, to a new place. That's not the time you want to have a deep discussion with your wife about marriage or anything like that. You say, honey, can we talk about this later? Or you pull over, one or the other. I'm not going to say which. But if you drive there every day, well, now it's your long-term memory that's functioning, and you can have a conversation. So working memory requires effort. It's limited. They have done studies, and they have shown that when people are exercising their working memory, their pupils dilate, their heart rate increases, their sweat rate increases. All of these things are going on within a child whenever they're using their working memory, okay? So the more you can help the child by utilizing information from their long-term memory, you're making their work so much easier. It prevents them from getting bogged down. So God has given this wonderful recall system, and it's up to us as educators to make sure that we utilize it. And how do we utilize it? How do we get that information from working memory into long-term memory? It's very simple, by regular repetition. Regular repetition. And all we have to do really is work the system. When we're developing curriculum, and I'll just talk about math facts because this is one area where we often see a weakness. When all the math facts that your children are learning, we divide them up in our curriculum development office into 3 categories. They're all the facts that they have not learned. Those are new facts that they're learning right then. And then you have all those that are in long-term memory. Those that you can have instant recall. I asked 12, what's 12 times 12? You knew that you have instant recall. All of us should have all of the facts through 12 in our long-term memory, okay? What happens to children if new facts keep getting introduced into working memory and they don't learn them and they're not transferred over into long-term memory? Eventually, the working memory category is so huge, they just get bogged down. And so when you cut out your drills, this is what's happening to your children. We have told homeschoolers sometimes it'd be better for you to just slow down. Don't even do math for the next week or two and learn your facts. Because Johnny is just really struggling. Every time he's trying to solve any problem, he has to either count his fingers, start counting by fives or fours, or go to the chart. It's extremely inefficient. So what we want is instant recall, and a wise approach is have the facts in the working stage. You know, when you take them from new into working, have them in that stage as short as possible. You want to hit it hard, have them learn it so it can go into long-term memory. That is the most efficient way to learn. Regular repetition. The best teacher I ever had, she was Ms. Cox. She was my 5th grade teacher. And she knew how to stuff us with information. I remember she came into class one day and she said, okay, children, Some of you are having problems with your sevens. Today, you're going to learn sevens. And we did. Like within 3 days, we knew them. But figured out, this is the order you're going to learn them. And we did learn them within a few days, and we knew them. And I still know them to this day. Whenever I recite my helping words, it just comes to me, and I know them. It's because she was a good teacher. She knew her stuff, and she knew how to stuff us with knowledge. Hit it hard, hit it frequently. So if you're doing facts, hit it at lunchtime, hit it at supper time, hit it in the evening before story time. You can do it over and over again. Daddy can do it, you know? Daddy, okay, son, do you know we're going to have our story time. Do you remember what 6 times 7? Or what is, 8 minus 3 or whatever it might be? Hit it in different ways. You can do written, you can do oral, you can do recitation. Mary and I, we visited a school in Latin America, and they had all the facts on a board on the side, and once or twice a day, the entire school would recite all of the facts together. Youngest children, like 5-year-old all the way up to 12-year-old. It was a one class, like one-room school. They were doing that every day. Those children, they know their facts. We've had some of them that would come work, help us out at Christian Light. They could do mental arithmetic better than any of us because they were grounded in their mental arithmetic and their facts. They didn't have to struggle with it. It became second nature to them. Hit it regularly, every weekday, and hit it often. The next thing I want to talk about is scoring. When I'm talking about scoring, I'm talking about checking work, both everyday work and also the tests. We find that sometimes when homeschoolers get bogged down, we start digging around and we notice that there are test-like units. Sometimes children, they'll take a quiz and the previous 4 lessons have not been checked. We've even seen where a child took a like unit test and half the like unit wasn't checked before they took the test. And I want to say that kind of management, or dare I say mismanagement, really, really hurts your children. And I want to say before I won't go any further, I realize that with homeschooling, there are times when we can't function in a regular basis. We have, babies come along, sickness comes along, we can have accidents. And so there are times whenever we can't function the way we'd like to and keep up with things. I realize that. But when those moments stretch out then and it becomes the norm, then we have a problem. So remember that illustration that I had about the pathway through the woods? Okay. So here's what happens to your children when you do not score their work. They learn the information wrong. And our curriculum is designed to be any good curriculum is designed to reinforce what they have learned through reviews. So let's say Johnny learned the information wrong in lesson 1. It's reviewed in lesson 2. He should know by now that he learned it wrong, but it wasn't checked, so he puts down the wrong answer again. Then in lesson 3, he puts down the wrong answer again. And he does that over and over until finally realizes mom says, oh, that's not the right answer. Well, he's been reviewed on this about 5 or 6 times now. Guess what? Not only does he have to learn the new answer, he has to unlearn the wrong one. Its act would have been better if he hadn't done those lessons. I heard a talk from someone that he was an educator and went to Australia. And he said, in Australia, all the light switches are backwards from what we're used to. So here you flick the light switch up and the light turns on. He said, in Australia, it's exactly opposite. He said, I had lived there for 3 months and I was still hitting that light switch wrong. And that we're really doing our children a disservice when we allow them to day after day work through material and not score their work. It really is important that it's done. Studies show that the sooner the mistake is revealed and the correction is made, the better the learning is. Have any of you used that English 2600 and 3200 that we had years ago? Any of you use it in the past? Kind of belaying our age here. It was a format where the children would actually learn. They would do the exercise, write down the answer, turn the page, and the answer was on the back. And as long as the children wouldn't just turn the page to cheat, it was a very efficient way of learning. Studies have shown the sooner you know the right answer or you get corrected, the better you will learn. So what is the most efficient? The most efficient is that you score every day. When I was a principal in the school, I just really reinforced it with the teachers. You need to score the work every day. And there's some teachers, they say, well, it's more efficient. I just like to do two or three lessons at a time. Yeah, it might be a little bit easier for you because you don't have to go get the answer key as often. I mean, it's a lot of work getting up and going and getting an answer key. But just think of the children and what it does to them. You'll find that in the long run, it's so much more efficient for the children if you just score the work every day. You just don't have the time to score the work. We found that there's this person called the father that you can actually train him to score. I'm serious. We had this session in Manitoba a couple of weeks ago. And I was so blessed. The one father, he was just, he said he had gone to his wife. You know, he would ask sometimes, how can I help? Because he saw she was busy. Homeschool moms get loaded. It's a busy work. And she'd say, you know, there's some scoring that needs to be done. And he'll just sit down and do the scoring. Also heard from another father, and I was really blessed with this. He scores all the tests. I love that. He scores all the tests, and so he knows what's happening in the school. If the children are really struggling, he knows. And what do you think? Does it do something for Johnny if he knows Daddy's scoring the test? And it doesn't take long. And usually the test answer keys are in a separate, you know, place anyway. So, yeah, that's something that could be done. Daddy scores the test, Mom scores everything else. So work together on it. And try to do it every day as much as possible, especially in the skill subjects. I understand, like, content subject, it might be a little different, but in math, language arts, it's just critical reading. It's critical to score the material every day. Develop a routine. Schools, good schools know this, that you develop the first 2 weeks of school, you focus on routine. Doesn't really matter how many lessons you get done. I told teachers, I don't mind if you only do two or three lessons a day. That's fine. Get the routine down pat. Here's how we check our work. Here's how we pattern. The method and teacher training that Christian Light has in their teacher training classes, we adopted that in our home. I guess we were used to that because of when we were teaching. And it worked well for us. Mom and Dad, they use the green pen. The children use red pens if they do score their own work when they get older. Children can score their own work once you get to about grades 4 or 5. Start in skill subjects. And then advance further. But don't do like one homeschool family that they really trusted their daughter in high school, so she scored her own tests. Yeah, just about fell off the chair when I heard that one. So parents always score the tests. And have separate colors for marking. That works well. And you have a pattern for when something is wrong. You put down an X. When it's corrected, you circle it. And when everything is done on the page, you circle the page number. And that way you can page through the book. And when the page number is circled, you know, when I was teaching, and we did this at home as well, I can page through a light unit. I just look at the page numbers. If they're all circled and I don't see a lot of red or green, everything is okay. And it's a matter of integrity. You do not circle the page number until it's all done. And if it's not all done, there's a consequence. This is a system. This is a pattern, a way of doing things. And it's really good. It prepares the children for in the future. Because let's face it, in life, in this society, there are patterns and way of doing things, and it's up to us as parents to teach our children that. That's why a lot of homeschoolers, whenever they are, you know, in a class setting, they sometimes don't know how to function. They're not used to these kinds of systems. But the fact is, if you drive, you take a driver's test. If you want to go get a license to become a plumber or anything like that, there are systems and ways of doing things. And if you don't follow them, have your household rules, be consistent, and be firm, and you'll be amazed at how much smoother everything will go in your class. Do I have time? I am 1 or 2 minutes over, but I have to do this now. Okay. So, I have decided to illustrate the how well God's system works in the brain. I'm going to attempt to juggle and recite the helping verbs at the same time. I don't know if this is going to work, but let's see if this works. If I drop the balls, then please, I was able to do it before, so. Am, are, is, was, were, be, being, been, have, has, had, would, should, could. Almost. So anyway, I learned to juggle as a teenager, and I can still do it today. And the helping verbs, I still know those today. You can do the same thing for your children. Have fun doing it. Be relentless. And in the end, you'll find that homeschooling's a lot easier. God bless you.